Great to have you along with us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today. We talk about sustainability quite a bit these days, but what about when it comes to things like batteries or light bulbs? We're going to learn about the life cycle of these products, how they're made, how they're disposed of, and how the technology has changed. And our guest is Andrea Hicks, an associate professor in the Department of Civil and Environmental Engineering at UW-Madison. She's also the Hansen Family Fellow in Sustainability, Director of Sustainability Education and Research. So, questions about technology and sustainability. Do you have questions about light bulbs or battery manufacturing and use? I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. Andrea Hicks, welcome. Thanks for being with us today.
Hi, Larry. Thank you for inviting me. I'm happy to be here.
In your work, you're an engineer and a researcher. You're looking at the environmental implications of technology. What are some of the common themes in your work?
That's a great question. So we work on things that are largely emerging technologies. So either they're new or they're not widely deployed. One example is we've worked on autonomous vehicles. So thinking about autonomous ride sharing and how autonomous ride sharing would shift how people go places and the corresponding environmental impacts. So for example, if you used to drive and you take an autonomous ride share, your environmental impact might not be all that different. But what if you used to take the bus and seeing about how we see these changes in carbon footprint with adoptions of new technologies?
Interesting. Well, and technology's moving so darn fast, it seems, at least to me. We have new models, new charging cords, new associations for our gadgets all the time that drive me crazy. Does that concern you in regards to sustainability?
It does. And there's this idea of planned obsolescence.
Yes.
Right? Thinking about, what are the lifetimes that are planned for and what should they really be? It's always funny when people talk about cell phones, because I remember in the early 2000s, right, where every phone manufacturer had its own unique cord.
Yes.
And I think, well, at least we're better than that now, where there's just a handful. And I don't have like this huge drawer of cords. But I do worry about those things. And we think about multifunctional devices. So like many of your listeners, I have a smartphone. And I think about all the things I can do on my smartphone that I couldn't do on my home phone. And that now suddenly, a smartphone isn't just for talking on the phone, but I'm sending text messages and I can check my email and I could order dinner. And how do we think about these environmental impacts of multifunctionality of, well, I don't need to take a camera on a trip, right? I'm just taking my phone.
Yeah. it's an amazing thing. Carrie in Sparta has something for us relating to this, I believe. Carrie, hi.
Yes, hi. Thanks for having me on. Say, when we're looking at all of these technologies, and all the batteries and things that go into these technologies, we can make them. But the problem is every time the cost of making power goes up, these things become unavailable because you can't manufacture something for a loss. And if you're paying too much for your power. And the problem with China is their whole problem came from arrogance. It was the arrogance of the CCP that's causing now even their phone companies to go bankrupt. They have three big phone companies, and they're going out. They're even their coal fire and their nuclear-powered plants are having an issue. They can't keep up.
What do you think, Andrea?
So as we think about sustainability of future energy technologies, particularly thinking about renewables that are sometimes intermittent, so particularly solar and wind, batteries are really critical to having a consistent electricity supply. People don't only use electricity, right, when the wind is blowing or when the sun is shining. But how do we use battery systems to store electricity for when we need it? and to also think about how do we offset issues with, you know, peak demand, where when everyone gets home, you know, we see demands, right? Everyone gets home and they cook dinner and they wash their hands and they use the bathroom. And you can actually see these peaks on grids. So I think batteries are going to be a necessary part of our future.
What the heck are they made of these days?
Lots of things. The more recent push has really been the lithium ion and the other lithium combinations. And those are used often in things like electric vehicles. And I would say that as we see, you know, a future trend toward electrification, so hybrid cars and electric vehicles, we're going to see more usage of these lithium ion batteries. And then also, there are some people who are looking at different battery chemistries, but I have to admit that's a little beyond where I usually work.
Where's the lithium come from?
That's
an interesting question. Yes, it is, I think.
And there's been some interesting questions about domestic versus international lithium supplies. There's a proposal right now to source lithium in the U.S. from a culturally sensitive site. And there's a question, you know, about the price of moving forward with technology versus, you know, things that we need to seriously think about from a preservation standpoint. What's good news, though, is lithium can be recovered from these batteries and used again. But actually, in preparation for this show, I took a quick look at, let's say I had some lithium batteries. What could I do with them here? And the US EPA has some wonderful resources where you type in your zip code, and it tells you where you could take these. And it includes, you know, general big box hardware stores, places you might go buy your electronics. And then they can take the lithium out and actually use it for future batteries.
So a place, once you're done with the battery, you can take it to certain, you can find out, just go online and find out where you can take those batteries back. Basically, that's interesting. Peter in Pewaukee has something, you mentioned hybrid vehicles. I think he has something relating to that. Peter, hi.
Yes. Good morning, and thank you for the show. Mm-hmm. Yes, I have a hybrid vehicle. Technically, how long would those batteries last? And as a side note, I saw a program on the production of lithium out in the desert in different countries.
Mm. Well, comments, Andrea?
So that's a great question. So typically, electric vehicles, when the battery is at 80% of its former performance, that's usually when they're changed out of vehicles. And there's some interesting work actually going on as to what do we do with secondary lifetimes of these batteries, because they're not operating at a level where they're good for transportation necessarily. But if we think about applications where we don't have to carry the battery around, they're pretty useful. So there's been a fair amount of work looking at used electric vehicle batteries for like household solar storage. So the battery isn't a performance that you could use in a car anymore, but you know, I could put it in my garage or with my solar array and it has a secondary lifetime because it doesn't have to work quite as well because I'm not like carrying it around. It's just sitting there. And there's also been some work for distributed solar where they say, you know, could we have banks of these batteries that aren't quite what they used to be, but still have a lot of lifetime left in them?
And they'll last. I mean, you know, I do an auto show from time to time on this program. And, you know, people call and say, well, I've got 300,000 miles on my hybrid battery. How much longer can I expect to have it go? And then there are others probably that, you know, my own daughter has one with 140,000 on it. Seems to be running just fine. The length is a bit up in the air, I suppose. And I would depend maybe on how it's used.
I mean, it depends how it's used. And the technologies are evolving pretty quickly, too.
Yeah.
And also on climate, actually. So in you don't, in places where the batteries get too hot, it can change the lifetime a bit. Whereas in Wisconsin, you know, we don't get that hot. And today particularly, we're not that hot, right? It feels like winter started with November 1st.
Yeah, Jim Ward was telling me from Smart Motors, Toyota said that they do better, those hybrid batteries do better in the wintertime, you know, and in cold climates than they do in the south. So, yeah, so there you go, Peter. Well, I tell you what, Jack in Eagle River, hang on, we'll get to you. And Saul in Stevens Point, we'll get to your question as well. What about you talking today with Andrea Hicks, Associate Professor in the Department of Civil and Environmental Engineering at UW-Madison, taking a look at sustainability when it comes to batteries and light bulbs. Haven't gotten to light bulbs yet, but I definitely want to get to that with her as well. We will take a quick look at the news. We'll find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. Then we'll be back with Andrea Hicks. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. And light bulbs, two things we all use every single day, and we're learning more about them today, from the manufacturing process to what happens when we're done with them. Larry Mueller here again. Our guest, Andrea Hicks. Andrea is an associate professor in the Department of Civil and Environmental Engineering at UW-Madison, and great to have her with us. She's also the Hansen Family Fellow in Sustainability and Director of Sustainability Education and research. So, questions for her. What questions do you have about sustainability and technology? Give us a call. Number's 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org. And let's go to Jack in Eagle River. Jack, thank you for waiting. What's on your mind?
I went to the recycling center about a month ago, and I took my oil, my fluorescent light bulbs, and my used batteries. And they said, well, you don't have to really, we don't really have a use for your used batteries. We only took them in because they used to contain heavy metals, and they don't anymore. I'm wondering if that's a true statement. So I'll take the answer offline. Thank you.
Thank you, Jack.
Hey, Jack, great question. Right. So if you're thinking about the consumer batteries like AAAs and AAs and whatnot, a lot of the recycling has fallen off for those, where recycling centers used to take them because of the heavy metals. And now they're saying, you know, you could just throw them out. And admittedly, that always feels a little weird to me, right? Because there's this ingrained feeling of I need to go take them. And really, a lot of where I see the battery recycling going is going to be the bigger, like lithium ion type batteries or even the smaller ones. But yeah, my personal suggestion would be to start thinking a little bit more about rechargeable batteries. They've come a really long way to where it's not, they work really well and could actually save you quite a bit of money over the long haul.
You know, Saul in Stevens Point, just kind of relating to this, he called to say that 70% of the world's lithium supply comes from China. China also controls the world supply of rare earth metals that is needed for a lot of our small electronics. He thinks we might run into some problems if our relationship with China gets even more difficult in the future. What do you think?
And that's a huge geopolitical issue, that the resources for these materials aren't equally distributed like pretty much anything in the world. You know, things are not evenly distributed. And there's some questions about technology that depends on certain materials that the U.S. relies heavily on but does not have in abundance. And suddenly the question is not just do they exist, but can the U.S. have access to them? So I think that's a fair question. And I think that's why there's some renewed interest in, are there potential sources of these in the US? But that runs into other issues too, if the sources are areas that are culturally sensitive.
Yeah. So what are these small batteries made of these days, if they're not made of the metals, the heavier metals?
Admittedly, I work more on
the
larger scale. This isn't the first time I've heard that a lot of places are suggesting that you should just throw them in your municipal solid waste, which admittedly, having grown up for so many years of having been told to go take them somewhere, it never feels quite right with me.
Yeah, me either. Well, you know, we haven't talked about light bulbs, and I do want to get light bulbs into the conversation. We can still talk about batteries, but I wanted to mention light bulbs as well. You know, I'm thinking back some years when the first long-lasting, the new type of light bulb came out. I spent some money and installed them, and I had not as good a success as I thought I was going to have with them, but they seem to have gotten a lot better over time.
Yes, there's been, you know, quite the evolution where incandescent light bulbs were dominant for so many years, right? When someone thinks of a light bulb, they think of, you know, that incandescent when someone has an idea in the cartoons right over their head. And there's been an interesting transition where we went to CFLs, compact fluorescent lamps with like the little curly cues.
Yeah.
Which had issues originally with color temperature. There were some concerns about mercury. And then if you go to your average hardware store, though, really it's mostly light emitting diodes with some compact fluorescents. There's a handful of incandescents for, you know, very particular things. And so light emitting diodes have really taken off. I think a lot of it has to do with the availability of incandescents and then also the price drop. When I started working now appreciably while ago with consumer light emitting diodes, which were like the screw-in incandescent replacements, they were well over $20. And at the time, you know, that's a really big investment if I could buy an incandescent for about a dollar. And I think part of it really has to do with the price dropping. And then also the fact that for the places where they're hard to replace, they have really long lifetimes. So when you start to think about, you know, that light over the stairs in the basement that you precariously use a ladder to replace, suddenly it's really attractive, right, to not have like this ladder teetering on the edge of your basement steps very often and say, okay, this will last like many years.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Atul in Appleton, let's give you a chance to join in. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So I have a EV, like, you know, a battery operated car. I have a Tesla, and I'm very happy with it. So I think this is the best purchase I made. But I was talking to a colleague, and so he was talking, like, you know, we were talking about like the environment and everything like that. And he said, your car is still charged by non-renewable kind of, you know, energy resources, like, you know, coal and all that. My question is, like, is there a percentage kind of, you know, in terms of environmental benefit my car is better than others? And what happens when the battery on this big car dies? How potentially kind of, you know, damaging that is to environment? And are we thinking about that?
Mm-hmm.
And so those are great questions. The Tesla that you particularly have is, so it's interesting, the biggest environmental impact for automobiles, whether they're internal combustion engines or electric vehicles, is the use phase. So when we own it, when we're driving it around, when we're charging it or filling it with petroleum products. The beautiful thing, though, about a plug-in electric vehicle is that as the grid decarbonizes, your environmental impact of using your car goes down. Right. So we've got coal power plants that have come offline. We've got an increase in renewables and a decrease in the carbon intensity of the electricity you're using. So without any additional effort on your part, as long as the grid continues to decarbonize, the environmental impact of using your car goes down, which is really exciting. In terms of the batteries, right? So there's a really big battery and there's some end of life questions. And I think that's where we get into the really interesting questions of secondary lifetimes. where the batteries don't have a performance level that makes them good candidates for you to drive around and use to power your car, but suddenly stationary applications make a lot of sense. So for like household solar or for small solar installations, to use that as storage. And so it's a secondary lifetime for a battery that doesn't work quite as well, but for a station the stationary application actually works really well.
So and you, then, oh, I'm sorry. Go, no,
go on.
Well, what I was going to say, so you would take the battery, so Atal would take his battery out of his Tesla or have somebody do it for him, and he stores it in his garage, but then he sets up a solar, or maybe he has a solar array on the house, and the solar array on the house charges that battery, as well as maybe doing other things in the house, for the house. But then it's a backup? Or is it the main way that Atal would use it in his house to turn on the lights and everything else?
So it depends how his system is configured. I mean, often when peak solar generation happens isn't necessarily when the peak usage happens. So it's storing electricity for when the sun isn't shining. And many of the people with solar panels are still, like, they're connected to the electricity grid. But you get into interesting things about peak pricing as well. So at times, right, when electricity demand is more, electricity technically could cost more, but many people aren't on plans like that. So it gets into the economics of optimization, which is really terribly fascinating. One thing I'd like to mention, too, is let's say Atal, you know, has his battery changed out by the dealer. Then the dealer can funnel that battery too into larger scale installations. Or I know there are some automotive companies contracting with some faculty in other states to say, you know, how do we test these, right? How do we make these battery banks and test them with solar panels in like beyond household scale, but smaller scale installations?
Very interesting. I was thinking about wind energy as well as it relates to this. There was a story in the I read this morning somewhere, and I'm forgetting where I read it, but it had to do with recycling the blades on the wind powered setups. And, you know, you got a 20-foot blade, and there are now companies that are going into the business of recycling or repurposing. I guess they fix blades for a long time, and then it comes a point you just can't, the company with the wind farm can't fix the blades anymore. And so then what do you do with them, these 20-foot blades? And apparently now there are some recycling companies that are developing to recycle those blades and work with the product or the materials from the blades.
Right. And I think historically there hasn't been enough wind turbines reaching their end of life to think about the market, right? So, but it's going to become a bigger and bigger issue that as we have more wind installations, and much like solar panels too, as we have more of the installations in the United States, many years from now, we're going to have more blades and panels that suddenly have reached their end of life. And what do we do with them? You know, do we recover the materials? Do we recycle the materials? And what's the next step? Mm-hmm. So I think that's a really interesting part that we need to think about for looking at the overall future sustainability of these electricity sources.
Carol in Milwaukee has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Carol.
Hi, thank you very much. Yes, I appreciate your guest, and yes, your guest is right. We can use these car batteries for some stationary applications, but the truth of the matter is the United States, we're just not there yet, and most of the car batteries are simply not getting recycled in the United States. It's a very highly intensive process to make these batteries, and then if you're going to try to recycle them for the materials, you'll have a mixture of lithium, magnesium, cobalt, and nickel, which requires further very intensive processing to recover the materials in a usable form. And frankly, our OSHA, you'd have to send them overseas because our laws are too stringent to even try to recover those. It would be a very dirty process. So I'm afraid, we're just not there yet with car batteries. We see all these things to make us feel good, but we still have a long way to go. I mean, the overall life cycle of a battery in a car will reduce carbon, but that's the entire life cycle. Not the, people don't realize it. We've got a long ways to go. Most of these batteries are not recycled.
Andrea, comment.
Carol, thank you so much for calling in with that. I appreciate it. And so that is actually a predominant issue that's historically been with electronics recycling overall. That for a long time, a lot of these components are shipped overseas, and where environmental regulations are not as stringent. And there's actually some really large human health and equity and environmental justice questions actually around that, if you look at what happens. And so I think Carol's point too brings back to the infrastructure you were talking about, Larry, for the wind turbines, right? We're not there yet on a broad scale. So the question is, how do we get there and how do we do it in an equitable manner, right? Because taking them and sending them overseas, is that really the best solution if we're looking at it from a global perspective in terms of environmental impacts, but then also in terms of human health? So I'm really excited Carol brought that up.
Carol, thanks again. Appreciate it. Ron in Madison, your turn. Hi, Ron.
Thanks. What is the overall efficiency of these chemical batteries? If you put 1 kilowatt hour of energy in, how much do you get back? Please contrast that with water storage batteries called pumped storage hydro. There's one on the east edge of Lake Michigan, which has been upgraded to nearly 2,200 megawatt capacity, and in a recent year it delivered back on the grid 722 gigawatt hours of energy. There are ones in Oklahoma, Missouri, and many other states and countries. That is the physical battery we need to use instead of these very expensive chemical batteries. Another source for lithium: dismantle all hydrogen bombs on Earth, then separate the lithium deuteride, use the lithium, and get rid of the hydrogen with two neutrons in it. Thanks.
Yeah, all right. Comments, Andre, there's a few things going on there.
Yes, Ron, thank you for your question. I'll leave the contrasting the efficiencies to people who work more closely in this area. What I would say is, water is a very old and very useful way of storing electricity, right? When we think about, we could capture essentially pumping water, up to store energy. And then when we need it, allow it to flow down and we turn some sort of turbine and then we use it. So, that's a very old, very efficient way of thinking about it. And I think there's questions when we think about environmental impacts and technology of comparing to what has historically been used and what nature has available to us, right? That comes up with all sorts of things like stormwater management, carbon capture, and all sorts of these new technological areas where it's also important to say, what services does nature provide that we need to think about as well?
Yeah. Thinking about the Wisconsin River, which at one point was called the most working river in the U.S. because of the number of hydroelectric dams on it. They pumped a lot of electricity, no doubt about it. Well, Rick called to say there are way... Oops, I just lost it. Derek emailed wondering, how do you dispose or recycle newer electronic ballast for fluorescent tube features? Not the tubes, but the ballasts. He's updated to LED retrofit tubes and cut out the ballast?
That is a fantastic question, and I have to admit it's beyond my area of expertise.
go ahead.
But it's a very real question, right, that people that are updating their lighting fixtures have of what do we do with the old parts and how do we dispose of these responsibilities?
Yeah, where do they go? Are companies and manufacturers, we were just talking about this earlier on the earlier portion of the show, being held accountable for the entire recycle, including waste of their products at this time? Not a lot of that, is there, or is there?
Not particularly in the U.S. I know Maine was looking for a while at some producer responsibility. So there's a question, too, as we think about designing things for the future, that right now the incentives don't exist to design things that are easy to manage from a waste perspective. Because extended producer responsibility doesn't exist for the most part. Whereas if a company knows, you know, when I get this back, I have to do something with it. You know, the question is, do you make products that then you can clean and keep using? Do you make products and packaging that are easy to reuse, right? To like melt down and use again. And so we're actually missing like a big part of that loop.
Where do you think batteries are? I mean, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, is it going to be a different kind of battery out there, or are they going to be lasting longer? What do you think?
I think there's a big push right now to look at different battery chemistries and to say, you know, really, where are we going from here? I think, you know, batteries are going to be a large part of our future as we particularly think about decarbonizing our electricity sources, particularly when we think about storage. And I mean, you know, as our callers have mentioned, various kinds of storage exists, right? Whether it's like pump storage to physical batteries. And I think what also may shape the questions is the availability of materials. So when we start to think about material criticality and materials available for geopolitical reasons, there's a question of what's feasible in the future and how that may drive our innovation and the selection of future materials.
Well, I bet there's going to be some work on what can we do? What's the next generation battery after lithium? Because if lithium, for political or other reasons, goes away, it's gonna enforce us getting something else, and you'll be looking at that. I'm convinced, Andrea. Thanks so much for taking time to be with us today. I really appreciate it.
Yes, thank you for having me. I appreciated the chance to take calls and chat with folks.
Andrea Hicks, associate professor in the Department of Civil and Environmental Engineering at UW. Great to have her with us here on the Ideas Network. And we can talk with her again about this down the road. Looking ahead at Sport Day on the show tomorrow, we'll talk about walking poles used by athletes and everyday people for exercise. Check in with Megan Hartz, our sports reporter, and look at muskie fishing. Stay with us. Lots in store. I'm Larry Mueller.